On Tech News Today, Turkey cuts internet freedoms, IBM's Watson goes to Africa, and Amazon buys a game company. All that and more coming up next.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
It's Thursday, February 6th, 2014, and this is Tech News Today. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free two-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TNT2. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Mike Elgin.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Tanya Hall.
And I'm Jason Howell.
Tech News Today explores the top tech news in 30 minutes or less. Well, bad news from Turkey. The Turkish government passed new laws that make it easier for them to censor the internet and surveil the public. The laws have triggered both outrage by opposition parties and protests in the streets of Istanbul. They also allow the Turkish equivalent of America's FCC, called the TIB, to block any website without a court order, and it also requires internet providers to store all user activity data for 2 years and hand it over when requested by the government. Joining us to talk about this is Uzgur Ukan, a writer and teacher who works at Istanbul's Bilgi University. He's Skyping in from Paris, France. Thank you so much for joining us, Uzgur.
You're welcome.
So you were quoted in the BBC as saying the new internet law is, quote, catastrophic for Turkey. Why is this a catastrophe in your view?
This law is already existed and it's already condemned by European Human Rights Court because it was against the freedom of expression and other important and basic rights. Then we expect they just review the law through the rights. They just done the contrary, and they create a kind of law which legalized the criminal act of surveillance, of privacy abolition, of arbitrary censorship, and total attack to the freedom of expression, freedom to know, right to know, and et cetera, and even freedom of communication. And, of course, press freedom, et cetera, we already a very bad record that. Why it is catastrophic. And after that, the internet will be not be the same. It's kind of to be kind of Turkey-wide web.
Well, you said that the internet in Turkey won't be the same. I lived in Turkey last year, and there was already a lot of censorship in Turkey.
Sure.
I've read recently that something like 40,000 websites are currently blocked in the country, and that's about 10,000 more than last year. So in addition to these laws, there's also censorship itself by blocking websites is on the rise.
With this law, 56-51 law, then they just strengthen their law, and they just create a kind of really criminal legislation. It's a surveillance state and arbitrary censorship. It's against economic, internet economy, et cetera, et cetera. There's very, very big problems with law.
How do you think this will affect Turkey's prospective membership in the European Union?
I think this kind of we already the country we just prison the most journalists. We have the very, very bad records about censorship, about a lot of things. Then internet, beside internet, we have a lot of problems. Internet was the really only alternative, especially social media. Because in Turkey, traditional media is totally governed by the government, economically and politically. Then the last Gezi resistance proved that without social media, there is no real right to know in Turkey. There is no real media.
Prime Minister Erdogan famously called Twitter, quote, a menace to society. Will the law also allow more government control of social media?
Sure. This is their real concern, because I call this law also as a kind of panic shot. Okay, because government panicked now. There's a lot of political stories and a lot of game, even the theoretical games, game theories, etc. in Turkey. It's law also is against leaks, because social media is the main platform. A lot of people share the leaks, like the Snowden leaks, etc. They put somewhere, like Pastebin, etc., these kind of platforms, and they publish the links through Twitter, etc., etc. Then they panic with why this law it's gets out too. And also, the like United States, like Snowden leaks and the NSA scandals. In the United States, they do that secretly, and you cannot prove really these anti-constitutional scandals. But in Turkey, with this law, they just legalize this anti-constitutional crime against constitutional rights, against the whole international conventions we signed by a state, etc. This law is a kind of a catastrophic surveillance state law, because TIB, the Telecommunication High Council, they create from TIB a kind of NSA-like body, and with extreme powers, they can easily arbitrarily censor everything, and they can this kind of things. And we have a lot of DPID, package inspection systems, etc., etc.
Well, thank you. I want to thank you so much for taking the time and late in the evening there in Paris to join us and explain and give your perspective on some of this. So thanks again for joining us.
Economically catastrophic too.
Okay, thank you. That's a great point. It could very well harm the economy. So thanks again for joining us. You can find Özgür at his website, which I'll spell for you. It's OZGURUCKAN.com. He's got a great blog there and a lot of great ideas. Thanks again.
Bye.
Well, we're going to tell you about Twitter's earnings report and what it all means in just a sec. But first, I want to talk to you about Squarespace. We talk a lot about Squarespace for people who build websites already, who are looking for a better platform to do that. And we certainly recommend that people move their website to Squarespace because everything goes better on Squarespace. We also talk about bloggers who are looking for a better blog. You got to go to Squarespace because the blogging tools are fantastic. But I also want to talk today for people who don't have a website, who don't have a blog, to think about having a website. There are a million reasons why you should probably have a website. If you have a small business, if you'd like to have a small business, if you publish a self-published book and want to promote that book, let me tell you a secret about the publishing industry. Book websites that promote books and sell books are terrible. 99% of the book sites that I've seen are horribly ugly sites. And if you write your own book or you write your own blog, you do any sort of content creation, creating a beautiful site will give you a huge advantage because it will make you look much better than everybody else out there. Squarespace is fantastic because they have beautiful templates for you to start with. So you go in there, you pick a template, and then you customize and modify it as much as you want. So you start out with something super beautiful, and then you end up with something that's both beautiful and unique on the whole internet because of the customization. If you ever have questions about your site, they have tech support 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and a real human being who knows what they're talking about will answer your question very quickly, and starts at only $8 a month. And that includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. The new Squarespace Metric app for iPhone and iPad lets you check site stats like page views, unique visitors, and social media follows. And their blog app, which I love and use all the time, pretty much every day, you can make text updates, tap and drag images to change layouts, and monitor comments on the go. And if you have a blog, your readers will love you because you're going to be moderating stuff very quickly because you can do it from a mobile device. Squarespace, of course, takes care of all the hosting. That's one of the best parts. They take care of the hardest part for you, and it's very robust and never goes down no matter how popular you become. So start a free 2-week trial with no credit card required and start building your website today. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code TNT2 to get 10% off and to show your support for this show. We thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. And remember that Squarespace is everything you need to create an exceptional website. Well, Twitter had an earnings report. I heard a rumor to that effect anyway.
Yeah, actually, on yesterday's Tech News Today, we mentioned that they were having their earnings report. Tech News Tonight, last night, we reported kind of an interesting little quandary for Twitter after its first quarterly earnings as a public company. So it was a big one, closely watched. Twitter stock was down almost 13% in after-hours trading. That was coming from investors' concerns over slowing user growth. However, a day later, it's fallen a lot further. Twitter shares fell almost 25% this morning, which represents a loss of about $9.8 billion in market value. That is nothing to shake a stick at. The stock debuted at $26 back in November. A lot of people thought that Twitter was deliberately undervaluing itself so that it would rally in the stock market and not suffer the same fate that Facebook did for the 6 months after it went public and had a lot of trouble getting its stock to stay at a good level. Hit a low of 50 in early trading this morning. This is Twitter again. The shares peaked at just under $75 back in late December. So many folks thought, wow, I mean, Twitter, what a great buy. They went public in November. The stock price was a nice solid $26. Then it goes up almost $50. Do we think it was inevitable that it kind of had to come back down to reality? Or is the decline in, not a decline in user growth, but the decline in the rise of user growth really spell problems for Twitter?
You know, I don't think it spells problems at all. In fact, what I think, Sarah, is that, you know, to your point, I mean, it had to come back down. Twitter's got a lot of new initiatives. Vivian Schiller, who they brought on from NBC, who formerly was the CEO and president at NPR, they brought her on in January. They've got some really big initiatives that they're going to be rolling out. So there's still a lot to come from Twitter. But, you know, it's I reached out to her this morning and she didn't want to comment on it. But they are working on some really big things and they're not, I don't think they're worried at all about this.
Yeah. I mean, I think everybody should, especially investors, should give Twitter a break because really every major social network that has been around for a few years, and especially, you know, Facebook and Twitter, they're all kind of plateauing a little bit. The rapid growth that we used to see is kind of a thing of the past simply because there are so many alternatives. And some of those alternatives are social networks. Some of them are actual competitors, and some of them are completely different. People are leaving social networks and going to messaging platforms. People are leaving social networks and going to Snapchat. There's so many alternatives. And the only social networks that I'm aware of that are pretty big and growing really fast are Pinterest, Instagram, and to a certain extent, Google+. Facebook and Twitter, you know, everybody got in there early. But, you know, Twitter, the thing about Twitter is that they their audience that they do have, even if they grow slower, is an awesome audience. Every journalist.
Well, exactly. That's what I was thinking. I mean, really, Twitter gets the users for their platform. They realize that it's a lot of media people. It's a lot of journalists. And, you know, we talked about Turkey a little while ago and the, you know, the fact that other countries are using it, and you have individuals that are becoming their own journalists reporting what's happening in their community, in their town.
Yeah, but journalists on Twitter, that is a small subset of the billion plus people that Twitter would like to receive.
But an influential one.
Sure, influential, but again, if you're not in the industry, it doesn't matter as much. You know, the journalist being on Twitter is, well, we're going to get our news package some way. The fact that we're all talking to each other on Twitter and sharing information, it's a great tool. I agree with that. Nick Bilton, who wrote Hatching Twitter and is also a frequent guest on the Twit Network, he had an interesting thought yesterday. He wrote, it was in a tweet, Twitter's growth problem isn't just about new users. It's about convincing people who joined in the Oprah days, then abandoned, to come back. And I think he's absolutely right. We don't have to be convinced that Twitter's a great tool. Twitter is still very confusing to people. There's a weird syntax. The design of Twitter.com keeps changing. People don't really understand how DMs work and how that will help them. It's hard to convince somebody that signed up for Twitter and then decided, I don't know, I'll just stick with Facebook, that it's actually a tool that they need.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I think another big weakness, if you will, for a lot of people on Twitter is the follow method. So, for example, on Twitter, when you post something, it just kind of goes out there and the conversations happen out there on Twitter. Right. This is different from, say, Google+ or Facebook. When you post something, the conversation that comes from that is right there on your post. You can block people and they are gone from that conversation, whereas on Twitter, they can continue. So there is a bullying and a kind of harassment element. I hear a lot of people complaining about being trolled and harassed mercilessly on Twitter, and they haven't found a good solution for that. And, you know, the other thing is that it's very, you know, the public thing is a problem for a lot of people, especially young people who don't want to be famous. They don't want a megaphone. They just want to talk to a tiny circle of friends and make sure nobody else listens to that conversation.
Well, and that's why you see them migrating to other things, like you mentioned Instagram, you mentioned Snapchat. And you're absolutely right. There's always going to be something, and there's going to be a place that the next generation goes. Or that, but I will say this again about Twitter, and I personally am really excited to see what Vivian does while she's there. I mean, to bring her in from NBC, and again, she president and CEO of NPR, she's got some clout, and they've got her heading up the entire news division. So they plan on doing something with this. Yep. I don't think we've heard the end of that.
Everybody wants to be a news organization these days, it seems like. So I understand that IBM's Watson is done playing Jeopardy for now.
How exciting. I know. So IBM is putting its Watson artificial intelligence system to work, boosting technology in Africa. The company is investing $100 million over the next decade to fund Watson-based projects and its African Research Laboratory in Nairobi, Kenya, and that's right. The company also plans to open an IBM Innovation Centers in Lagos, Nigeria, and Casablanca in Morocco. And Johannesburg. I can't talk this morning. South Africa. I think it's all that soda. You know, they've got, I can understand, you and I were talking about this morning. I can understand Africa. I'm not so sure about, you know, some of the other places that they want to go. And you said you thought Morocco was okay, but Nigeria?
Yeah, well, you know, Nigeria has a need for a lot of educational things, and everybody needs a supercomputer. That's one of the big problems with the world that we live in, is the difference between those who have access to massive amounts of compute power and those who don't. Well, Steve Ranger is joining us to talk about this. Steve is the UK editor-in-chief for ZDNet and Tech Republic, and we thank Steve for joining us. Thanks for being here.
Hey, no problem.
Steve, can you tell us more about the nature of IBM's investment in Africa?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, IBM is spending $100 million over the next decade to take its Watson cognitive computing system into Africa. It's got a new research lab in Nairobi. It's talking to startups and researchers and development agencies to try and see if it can take Watson, which is effectively a kind of a huge tool for exploring unstructured data, to see if it can use that to address some of the kind of the issues that that you have in Africa. I think it's a really interesting idea because you're taking something which started off in a game show and using it to actually you know, explore some really kind of important issues around education or healthcare or infrastructure. So I think it's a really interesting move.
As I understand it, this is in part can be understood as the application of big data, the big data movement, to the problems that Africa has around hunger, disease, and things like that. How do you gather the data? Isn't the hardest part getting the data from the farmers, from the NGO workers, from all these different sectors of society and getting them into the system?
Yeah, absolutely. Gathering the data is one of the big problems. I think the bigger problem, which is what they're hoping to address with Watson, is that once you've got the data, then you have to work out what to do with it. It's quite the same as any large organization that has huge amounts of data it's been storing for years and years, doesn't really know how to break it down, doesn't know how to analyze it, has it all in you know, vast, unstructured piles of images or notes, doesn't know how to fix that. So what they're trying to do is kind of take that technology and use that to take that data and maybe come up with some answers to some actual evidence-based responses to some of the issues around healthcare or education. It's quite an interesting enterprise, I think.
So, okay, this is their 12th. I mean, for a lot of people that maybe even don't even know, I mean, this is a supercomputer, you know, was kind of famous, I think, when it won Jeopardy. Beat the current Jeopardy champion in 2011. What do you think kind of the long-term play is for, what are they trying to accomplish with this?
I think their long-term play with Watson is huge. If you remember, IBM is selling its x86 server business off to Lenovo. A big chunk of the money it's getting for that is effectively the money it's going to Watson. It's getting something like $2 billion for selling that business, spending some on cloud, and it's saying it's spending $1 billion on Watson. That's because I think it's got very high hopes for Watson. After winning Jeopardy, it kind of went a little bit quiet. I mean, it's been making some steady progress, but But I think IBM looks at something like Watson, this learning technology, this cognitive computing, as something that it can really use over the next decade or longer to really drive the business forward. I think it's one of the big bets that IBM is going to make over the next decade. So the African use is interesting in itself because that's a really kind of fascinating application of it. But I think Watson is going to be a really big play for IBM.
You know, Watson physically used to be the size of a room, right? It was like it's some sort of mid-sized bedroom or something. Mm-hmm. And we've reported that it steadily, as computers tend to do, gotten a lot smaller. So it makes a lot more sense that you'd say in an emerging market, let's get some supercomputers over there. Let's figure out how the technology can even leapfrog over some of the tech that maybe never got to Africa or hasn't stuck in Africa. Mobile is such a big potential on the continent right now. It seems like a good time to get Watson International.
Yeah, I think so too. And Steve, we have another show here called Twit, as you probably know, and another one called Twig this week in Google. Another one called a MacBreak Weekly, and on MacBreak Weekly, a gentleman named Alex Lindsay, who's the CEO of PixelCore, does a lot of work around education and infrastructure development in Rwanda. And he's been telling me all kinds of stuff about how exciting it is there because there's so much infrastructure development, high-speed internet. We've also heard, and I think we've mentioned it on the show, that Google's installing their Google Fiber initiative in Uganda. In Kampala, the capital of Uganda. There are also tech centers all over sub-Saharan Africa, especially in North and East, that are springing up. It seems like a really exciting time for technology in Africa.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you think most of the people will never go through that whole buying a PC process, they'll just go straight to a smartphone or a tablet. They'll absolutely leapfrog that level of technology. So for IBM, I think it's quite interesting to be there just to kind of be part of that, to understand this huge kind of leapfrogging, very exciting, full of energy, full of excitement, progress that's going on. And I think that's why it's really great that they're actually there doing it rather than kind of viewing it from outside. They're actually in there, in the market, in Africa, helping to fix problems right there and then rather than trying to impose something from outside. I think local solutions to local problems is a really, really good way of going forward with this.
Well, thank you so much for bringing your insights to Tech News Today. Appreciate it.
Pleasure.
All right, you can find Steve at Steve Ranger on Twitter. A startup called Refresh launched a Google Glass app today that presents a dossier on the people you meet. It harvests this information from sites like LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, GitHub, AngelList, Yahoo, and Zillow. It also connects to your calendar and shows you a dossier of people you're about to meet. I think this is a fascinating app. This is exactly the kind of thing that people who are wearing Google Glass want, but the kind of people who are not wearing it don't want.
Yeah, there are a lot of apps that are designed to highlight is one that comes to mind. It's designed to basically push information about people that you might be physically nearby. It makes sense if you're at a conference or if you're at a dinner party where you go, oh, gosh, how do I know this woman? Oh, yes, great. That sort of thing. This just seems like another version of that, but it's on your face. What am I missing here? A lot of Google Glass apps seem like that to me.
Well, exactly. And, you mentioned Highlight, which got a lot of popularity when it released at South by Southwest. But, you really don't hear about it that much anymore. I mean, to your point, when is it really applicable, right? I mean, when are you going to use it? And I think at an event, I think, if you're at a big conference. But then there's so much competition in the space. So I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, as a Google Glass wearer, one of the things that's interesting about it is that people jump on the practical application of it. Yes, I mean, there is a Refresh app for the iOS, for iPhone, that does less. It does a lot more than the Google Glass app. The Google Glass does less, as almost all Google Glass apps do. It's a very limited user interface. Does something in the same category, and I've tried this app. It's pretty great. There's another Google Glass app that does something similar called People Plus, and People Plus was controversial when it first came out because it sort of feels like you're spying on people. But when you're wearing Google Glass, the experience of just having knowledge of the people you're talking to is pretty. It's pretty compelling.
So,
it's pretty great.
And the big difference is that you don't look down into your hand.
The big
you're looking
difference,
into someone's eyes.
Well, you can extend that idea all the way back to computer. Why do you need a phone when you have a laptop? Why do you need a laptop when you have a desktop? It's not about the practical value of being able to access that information, or that it gives you information you wouldn't otherwise have. It's about the experience. The experience of using Google Glass, and I also predict the experience of using smartwatches and other wearable devices, is that the information, there's another layer of barrier that's been removed between you and the internet, between you and the information you want, and psychologically that enhances your whole experience.
Get rid of this.
I know. Well, but it, well, but again, it's not about the practical application. It's about, you know, to a certain extent, it changes your behavior. You learn things, just like phones. I'm old enough to remember that when you didn't know something, you everybody went, well, that's too bad. Gosh, it's too bad. I can't know that. It's impossible to. Nowadays, you have a question: who's that actress in the movie? What's the information?
How old are you? Really?
Old enough to remember, but so, you know, this removes it even further. So there are cases when you wouldn't even bother to pull out your phone, whereas in Google Glass it might pop up and just be in your face.
You did mention though that to be the person who's talking to the person wearing Google Glass, mm-hmm. it gets weirder and weirder. I mean, I don't really have that many people talking to me or wearing Google Glass because there just aren't that many wearers yet. However, you almost start to liken it as once you realize the potential of what someone might be scanning about you because you're in their vicinity, it's almost like they're like, hi, nice to meet you. I'm holding a video camera. Let's chat. Mm-hmm. And you're like, I don't like that guy. He's creepy.
Yep.
And that's something that Google Glass or any other company who's trying to piggyback on this technology is going to have to deal with.
Yeah. I mean, that is a good point. And, you know, part of the problem there is that people aren't really clear about what personal information they've made public.
It depends on what app is installed. It's every Google Glass wearer might be using it for different things, and that's where it gets weird.
Maybe what we need for anyone wearing Google Glass is for them to also be wearing a shirt that shows everyone else what they're seeing in glass.
Yeah.
So if they're reading a dossier on you, at least you know about it.
Well, that's right. And there's other things out there that are sensory, you know, about dating and you know, you'd be able to look at the person. I mean, there's all kinds of invasive, you know, Sarah, to your point, you know, technology that, and I get it. I don't want somebody looking at their phone when they're talking to me, much less wearing Google Glass, although obviously people are doing it. And I don't think it's technology that's going away. I think it's the more, how are we going to adapt to it? How are we going to like it? I've actually not worn it, but you're a big fan, obviously.
Yeah, big fan. And, you know, it's something that we're all going to get used to, and whether you have glass or not, this information is generally available. I'm kind of bullish on Google Glass and things like it. I've written a column recently that said, however, that I think they should just remove the camera. The camera's freaking everybody out. Camera's causing all kinds of problems. First of all, people think the Google Glass is a camera that lives on your face, and that's how people use it. Google Glass users aren't really using Google Glass. They're using the camera. They're taking videos and pictures and stuff like that. Hardly anyone installs these apps and mm-hmm. uses them. Hardly anyone. And it's really too bad because the apps are, to me, the best part. I absolutely love some of these apps. A lot of them don't work. This is all very early days and alpha-like. Right. But it's, you know, the potential is definitely there. And I think that one way or another, we'll find our way forward. And, remember that Google had a face recognition app and they sort of
rejected,
put the kibosh on it.
That's right.
But what they don't do, somebody else will do in an app form.
That's a good point.
Well, moving on to what might look like a bit of a good year for HTC, or at least a turnaround. 2013, not a good year for the company. Their sales dropped 30% last year, which was the company's third annual decline. So it wasn't just some bad year. Product delays were part of the problem, a shrinking marketing budget, competitors like Lenovo, LG. HTC also posted its first annual net loss in 2013. However, Chang Chialin, who's the chief financial officer and head of global sales for HTC, which is based in Taiwan, tells Bloomberg that an updated version of the One smartphone, which even though it didn't save the company, has been well received so far, plus a new wearable device that the company's been working on and a better focus on marketing, is going to turn things around this year. Apparently, this wearable device won't be available anytime before the Christmas season, so we're looking at almost a year from now. And apparently, there have been some setbacks because, as other companies have been vocal about, it's hard to make something where the battery life makes sense. Then you're starting to get into the idea of solar technology, and it sounds like the folks at HTC don't want to rush out a product that isn't going to make HTC seem head and shoulders above what some of their closest competitors have on the market as well. Samsung comes to mind. The executives declined to tell Bloomberg whether HTC's marketing budget is going to rise this year. Famously, Robert Downey Jr. signed a $12 million contract in 2013 to sort of be the face of HTC. I don't know. Didn't make me buy anything from HTC, but he's certainly a big name. And then Bloomberg also reported an anonymous source that the next HTC One model may be coming as early as March. All right, well, that's next month. That's right around the corner. It is a very nice phone.
Yeah.
But it didn't put HTC in any sort of top bracket for, you know, the Android marketplace. That's
Haven't seen anything that makes me believe that they're going to turn this around. Yeah. They're putting their hopes on making tons of money with a smartphone and with a smartwatch. Ain't going to happen. By the time they get that watch on the market, there's going to be a glut of smartwatches, and only a minority of users are likely to get those. Nobody's making money. Nobody's making profits in the smartphone world except Apple and Samsung. And every other handset maker is scrambling for the crumbs. And HTC is another one that's going to be scrambling for crumbs. It seems unlikely that they're on the brink of coming out with a phone that's so awesome, so desirable, that they're going to be able to have a high profit device that will pull them out of this mess.
Absolutely. What? I mean, everyone's getting into the wearable device space. So the competition is definitely out there, and it doesn't sound like they're really doing anything that exciting.
So what do they need to do? I mean, I suppose that's the question that they're asking themselves. But HTC used to have an incredibly strong brand, and they still make great devices. But their strategy obviously isn't working. What exactly does it take for a company like HTC to reverse the trend and become powerful again?
Well, they need radical innovation, and they need to pick a subset of the market that they can completely dominate. I don't know what that is. Maybe they go for the emerging markets and compete with the Chinese upstarts in those markets. Maybe they go for the super high-end and become a luxury brand. I don't know what their core competencies are, but just come out with another pretty cool phone and another pretty cool smartwatch
that
isn't really going to do it.
Yeah, that continues to not work for them.
Yeah, it's another alternative, of course, is for them to specialize in other types of wearable devices, or go after vertical markets. Maybe they go after manufacturing or retail or something like that. I don't know. It's a tough market. It's really tough out there because on the one hand you have Apple dominating the high end, you have Samsung, which is a very very dominant player, and then you have all these Chinese upstarts. Lots of them who are very aggressive at selling at top, bottom of the barrel prices. So it is not looking good. Well, let's see. What are the big gaming platforms? Microsoft, Sony, and Amazon?
Amazon. Well, Amazon is in the news. We talked about Microsoft earlier this week. Amazon has acquired Double Helix Games, the maker of Silent Hill, Killer Instinct, and many other titles. Amazon said that Double Helix Games, now available, currently in development, will be supported in the future. So for those who are wondering, we reported previously that Amazon was rumored to be working on a low-cost game console. Well, that would compete with Xbox and PlayStation, which makes a lot of sense. Microsoft has been really successful in this space. I am not surprised at all that this is something that Amazon is doing. In fact, it's a smart play. They've been hiring a lot. They've really ramped up their staffing. That was, I just got back. I've been in Seattle, and they've done a lot of recruiting and hiring. This is an interesting strategy. I'm very curious as to see where they're going to take this.
Yeah, it seems like every Silicon Valley or technology company wants to get into the Hollywood business, making TV shows and movies and things like that. And now games. Everybody wants to be a content creator. Once again, every time you talk about Amazon, you have to give them props because they're a very smart and aggressive company that does a lot of innovative things. And so it's going to be really interesting. I think it's kind of also interesting that they had planned to announce this February 13th. Most likely, and that because of a leak, they were forced to come out and confirm this news.
Does Amazon have what's considered a original television content hit yet? I know it's got Betas, which is about Silicon Valley, which I haven't seen, but I haven't heard it's good. Mm-hmm. The reason I ask is because it only takes one hit.
Yeah.
Really.
Right.
Whether it's
one
a game, one House of Cards, right, or a show, or, an original movie, for people to go, oh, whoa, Amazon's a gaming studio now. That's great. Right. And so I think that this is just a natural progression for the company. They want original content, and acquiring an established maker of games is probably a better way to do it than try to start something organically in-house.
It's also interesting because Double Helix is not the hottest game company anymore. They had Silent Hill was a big hit. People know them for them. And they have some moderately successful games. They're pretty much, I'm not a specialist in the gaming industry, but they seem like they're kind of on the decline. But I'll bet you that Amazon throws a ton of money at them and possibly even revive them as a powerful game platform.
I would absolutely agree. That is exactly what I was thinking. Jeff Bezos has been an incredible CEO. They've got this is a smart play because they didn't just acquire the software; they acquired the talent,
the know-how.
Exactly. And so there's clearly some major content strategy that they're playing.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a lot of hush hush around the whole Seattle tech space about what they're doing. They've got some big initiatives ahead.
Yeah, and we were actually talking about a couple of weeks ago on All About Android about Amazon's kind of fabled, set-top box and living room possibly being under $300. And we're like, why would anyone pay $300 for a set-top box? That's like an Android console that plays games but does Netflix and everything when everything else is at $99. But then when you tack this into the equation, it's kind of like Nintendo having their console that you pay a little bit more for, but that's because Nintendo also makes great games only for their console. So maybe you end up getting this and it justifies the $300 cost for their set-top box.
That's right. And if it starts out at $300, you can be sure that it'll be, if it's Amazon, it'll be $100, $150 in 6 months. Or they'll start discounting it very heavily. Well, a little follow-up. We told you yesterday about Japanese reports that Sony would be getting out of the PC business by selling its VAIO unit to an investment fund called Japan Industrial Partners. Today, Sony confirmed that information, and the deal is expected to close by March. Sony also announced plans to lay off 5,000 workers globally by March of next year. The company will also spin off its TV business into a separate subsidiary by July. Sony's fiscal year ends in March, and the company is forecasting a huge loss, about $1.1 billion for the year.
Exiting the North American ebook business as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, let's move on to something fun, the high seas, taking a cruise. Everybody likes taking a cruise. I've only been on one cruise in my life, but I had a lot of fun. But it's better when you have a view from your room. You get the little porthole, you can see the ocean, you don't feel so claustrophobic, those rooms are small. But if you don't have a view, the next big thing is a TV that shows you a video of what might be your view. That's Royal Caribbean's idea anyway. They have something called virtual balconies that are in 81 rooms on a new cruise ship. 80-inch TVs, high-def TVs, those are huge televisions that show near real-time video of what your view would be. So it's not like a Yule log. It's actually what's going on outside. So it's somewhat, I don't know. If you had a window, then this is what you would see, and you pay less, of course, for the video version of it. It's taken by two RED Epic digital cinema cameras. The virtual balconies will supposedly feel like you're actually looking at the view, but it might look more like a TV playing a view. I don't know.
This is Total Recall right here.
Yeah.
This is an original, not the remake.
You remember
the original Total Recall. They did this.
I do. It's funny because as soon as you started talking about it, I kept thinking about the cruise that was just returned, the Princess Cruise, right, with 170 sick passengers.
That's
Maybe they're doing this because everybody's getting sick on cruises and they can't actually do anything.
Put the cameras in the kitchen. I want to keep an eye on what they're doing in the kitchen before everybody gets sick.
Having the window, there's only so many rooms that can be on the outer perimeters.
Right,
those little staterooms are teeny tiny.
Yeah.
So even psychologically, I think that it will make at least some passengers feel a lot better.
Yeah.
They're not missing out on.
I still want to change the channel. Well, that's our show. Send your news tips to our email address at tnt@twit.tv or call 260-TNT-SHOW and leave a message for us. Also, upvote the stories you'd like to see us cover on our subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com and find the rest of our social pages by searching for Tech News Today on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, and YouTube. And if you haven't already, subscribe to Tech News Today at twit.tv/TNT. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.